Morning, everybody. This is News Radio 94.9 890 KDXU. It's Wednesday and time for Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
It is Wellness Wednesday, and this is the Elder Care Radio program, and we're excited to be here.
Good morning, everyone.
I'm Richard, and this is Kaylee, and we're with Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care. And, you know, every week we try and come up with something to be interesting and useful that relates to elder care and solving some medical problems, and we hope we've covered that today. We've, you know, it's been a great past couple of weeks. I learned a lot. I lived.
I was gonna say, Richard, you owe it to all your fans out there to give them a health update. Are you doing better?
So doing much better. Haven't overcome it completely. I still have a congestion in my chest that we're working on. So I cough a lot. And
for the record, by the way, Richard did not have COVID.
No.
Didn't have COVID. So it just goes to prove that the rest of the virus community is still out there, you know, affecting people.
So we just need to be taking care of ourselves at all time.
Yep. Did they call it RSV or just a
no,
a
they
lung...
actually tested him for that, too.
Didn't have that either.
No.
Just lung infection, congestion. Something.
I think I said it last week. You know, the interesting part is I believe he thought that he was so healthy that he could just keep pushing himself, going to work, not resting, not taking any vitamins or
Richard.
Eating better or getting
it's
sleep.
My fault.
And well, I'm, you know, I mean, it's no one's fault. Nobody chose to have that happen, right? But I do think that we have to be our own best medical advocate. And I think in this case, Richard didn't advocate for himself and it cost him.
Well, and ultimately, when I was involved, when we actually had a plan and we're working the plan, that's when I recovered. You know, it wasn't because I was waiting. And I think that's, you know, for most people, they wait. You know, it's just, okay, well, this will pass. And this didn't pass. And so when I was able to have a plan, you know, with our doctor who, you know, I call and get a plan and they got us some medications and some therapies. And I was able to get on top of that. And that would be being involved in your own medical care, being your own best medical advocate, taking a stake in it. Then I was able to overcome it and on the recovery side. So I'm very thankful. A, that I'm here, but B, that I had the medical help. And I think it's important, you know, if I had gone to the hospital, I would have just been processed, you know, for COVID. Let's expect that. We're, you know, we have a plan and we'll put you in a room. And that wouldn't have been better than being at home.
Well, and we had a patient call yesterday, a husband and wife who both actually have COVID. The husband, it's turned into pneumonia. It's in his chest.
Oh, boy.
And the hospital said, well, you know, we're busy and you're going to be okay. Go home. And they were just like at a loss. So we spent 3 hours in the emergency room. But now what? What do we do at home? What do we do to help ourselves? And so they called our office. And it's just a weird time. But we go back to way before COVID was ever found and say the one thing you have in your favor is you know you and you can advocate for yourself and you need to. You need to ask questions. You need to push for therapies and services and things that you need. If you just are meek or just lay your condition at the feet of the medical professionals and walk out the door, you could be in some big trouble. You must, you know, advocate for yourself. And if you're incapable of doing that for yourself, make sure you always have somebody who can advocate for you.
But the other part of that, of course, that you know, was scary. You know, if I just had a regular physician relationship where, you know, I call my doctor's office
and they say, we're booked for 3 weeks.
Yeah. And then you're like, okay, so what do? I just wait for the 3 weeks. And that's where, you know, that downfall comes. Or you run off to the emergency room and the effectiveness of the care there is may not be as good. So if we can bring that care into the home and do all the things, I was able to have oxygen. We can, you know, we can deliver that. We can, you know, deliver medications immediately and, you know, heavy duty antibiotics to try and solve some of these problems. But most importantly, and this is, I guess, the real takeaway, is that because of the business we're in, we're hospice and home health and palliative care, if you called us, we could respond. You know, we'll take the call first and start that. But we can have a nurse come out immediately and do an evaluation so that we can get those therapies in place so that we can do those things and put that in play. And you don't have to go sit in a waiting room at a hospital and possibly catch COVID if you didn't have it and do those things. We can just immediately bring that. So on an emergency basis, if it's a life-limiting condition and, you know, it's a threat for our elderly community, know that our number, 477-6999, is the number to call because we will come out and help. And there's no cost for that first call.
Many of you may not realize that the whole reason we opened this business was to help our senior community with whatever their needs were, answering questions, give directions, information, what have you. So that being said, whether you are on service with our company or not, we do want to help you. And we will at least give you the direction, the access, the information to help you move forward and take care of your own medical condition under the direction of a physician. We're not suggesting that, you know, you walk away from your physicians. We're saying you need to work with your physicians. You need to keep them informed of your medications profile, and you need to keep them informed of your goals, and stand up for yourself. Don't be afraid to, if you're prescribed something, if somebody says, yeah, I don't think this is it, go home. Don't be afraid to say, you know, I'm not leaving till you discover what this is. Or you give me some kind of direction, but you have to stand up for yourself.
And be fully informed. A lot of people, you know, they just assume their doctor's doing the thinking for them, and they don't have to. And that's not the way to play this game, if we're going to use that analogy. You got to be engaged. And your doctor is not going to be offended if you want to know things. Doctors are generally afraid to tell people things because there are people who don't want to know. They really have that tunnel vision. I don't even want to know any of my, you know, problems. But if you don't know, you can't resolve it. If you don't understand it, you can't work to fix it. So you should know. And we would encourage everybody to be better informed about their own medical conditions. And we've talked about that in the past. And today we want to cover some proactive things that we can do because of circumstances that people find themselves in and they didn't realize it. So we're going to talk about that we're going to be doing some alternative therapy conversations, things that we can integrate in with conventional medicine. But today, this one, we're going to talk about opioids and how those affect us and what we can do to try and mitigate the problems that they create. Now,
I think as you find, these studies are on opioids specifically, but I think what you find is this really correlates to all medications. The longer we are on medications, the good, bad, and the evil of them,
yeah.
You know. Yes, absolute benefits, but we have to, again, advocate for ourselves, be proactive, and remember that any time we're on anything for an extended period of time, there are outcomes or consequences of it. Some good, some bad. So we have to consider those facts.
Right. So certainly there's an opioid epidemic. We've got more fentanyl being brought into the country illegally, you know, now than ever before.
And that's legally.
And we're not going to worry about the big picture. We're really going to just focus on you, the individual, and opioids and how that affects you. And so first thing, and I think we need to understand what opioids do to us. The first few times that we take an opioid, it will mask pain. However, our bodies respond to that. And it's interesting when we start looking at this. You got about 4 weeks before the opioid becomes a negative. And that is that, you know, when we're feeling pain and we can take an opioid and we can relieve that pain, that doesn't mean that the cause of the pain goes away. It just means we've masked it. And our body is trying to notify us, hey, we've got this problem and you need to be aware of it. And so
we mask the pain and the problem seems to go away in our heads. And
right.
It hasn't.
But our bodies are actually saying, hey, you're not getting the message. So they create more pain receptors to deal with it so that when the opioid does wear off, now we have an even larger noise about this pain. Not that the pain is worse, it's that the receptors are more sensitive to it. And so we create this problem of, well, we had a pain from an injury. And let's talk about different kinds of pain in a minute, but we're going to talk about pains from an injury, whether that's a surgery or a broken bone or, you know, some other type of thing that we do, you know, that we're trying to correct. So this is an immediate pain source that we're taking opioids for. So our body knows that we have this problem that it's trying to solve, and it's trying to tell our brain, and we're trying to mask that. And so our body tries harder. We build these additional pain receptors. So when the opioid does wear off at the end of the 4 or 8 hours, now all of a sudden that pain seems to be worse, which encourages us to try and take more opioids. And you see where the cascade of problem comes. So 4 weeks, and this is a rough number, but 4 weeks, if you're on opioids for more than that, you probably are entering into some problem areas. And so if you've been on opioids for years, and many people have, and we've seen that, now all of a sudden you've got this just need for the opioid to even out our body's pain receptors. We're just trying to solve that. So another part of this that's important is that our bodies do create endorphins, which are kind of a body-based opioid, and those endorphins help us mask pain and overcome problems, except that when we take opioids, it reduces our body's ability to create endorphins. So we're throwing opioids at this problem, and we're creating all of these secondary issues that we have to deal with and overcome. So if we can, early on, if we can solve the opioid issue, we can figure out ways to not use those as much. We won't create the problem in the first place. Our body won't have to overcome it. But if we are in that problem, then we really need to work on ways to eliminate those opioids.
I think that we need to remember that the body is pretty incredible. It's absolutely miraculous. It wants to be healthy. It wants to be whole. It wants to help you heal and, if possible, cure itself. But even a low-grade fever or a high fever, really, it's not that is a negative. That's your body's way of fighting something. It's trying to kill a bacteria or a virus. So we really have to kind of recognize the keys and the messages that our brains are giving us to tell our body that there is a problem. So as Richard was explaining, pain, absolutely, we need to deal with pain. And in this country, we're kind of taught and even advertised to that a pill will fix everything. It will cure your pain. But the truth is, it will mask the pain, and we will no longer be focusing on the problem. We're just masking a symptom. And that's really in all medications. We are talking about opioids, but just remember, some medications are used to heal a problem or prevent a problem, like a medication used to prevent blood clotting, and others are used to mask symptoms. When we're using a medication that is masking a symptom, we will always have the problem when we stop using that med, or our brain, being so smart, will move to another area, give you another pain, another symptom, another sign, and say, hey, this is still an issue for you. So recognize and ask yourself, is this covering a symptom or is this curing a problem? If it's masking a symptom, you need to look for alternate ways to deal with the problems or to cure the problem so that the problem itself goes away and then the symptom will go away.
Which is a good point, because the pain may not be caused by one particular problem. It may be a totally different one, like emotional pain or trauma. There's physical pain that we get from an event, but there can also be trauma and emotional pains that we are trying to deal with. Now, an opioid will mask all of it, because in the brain, those pains are managed in the same area. So that opioid will mask the trauma or the emotional pain along with the physical pain. But when the physical pain is gone and we step off of the opioid train and we still have pain that we haven't addressed, then we're not solving any of those problems. So we really want to look, when it comes to pain management, we really want to look deeper than just, yes, we've got this kink in my neck or things like that, and try and find out if there are other underlying issues. Because on the emotional side, man, just being in an automobile accident, that event can be very traumatizing, or falling or any of those can be traumas, mental traumas, that if we're not addressing those, if we're not actually talking about it, if we're not, you know, sharing that information and trying to work through it, and that's where psychotherapy or, you know, those types of things may be very helpful, that will help us relieve our need for opioids. It will reduce that problem and allow that our bodies to heal the pain that needs to be healed without having to deal with a lot of other things we're trying to mask.
I had a question about yes. pain. We're talking about pain. You talk about addressing the pain, trying to fix the problem so that you can get off the meds. But what about chronic pain, pain that is never going to go away?
Right. And that's that's an excellent question. And so we should be exploring alternative options other than opioids. And the sooner we try those options, the better. Before we create a chronic opioid problem, if we can find therapies that can help reduce that or at least reduce our need for opioids, then we're contributing to the solution instead of just contributing to the problem.
And I to go expand on that, I interrupted you before. So one of the things that we really need to remember is, yes, we may need to treat a chronic pain condition. There are other alternative therapies that will reduce our need, at least the amount of intake, but we're also building up intolerances for those medications or tolerances where we need more and more. So what we can also do is help our body every time we take in a medication. There's an adverse consequence or a depletion of a cell or a mineral or, a vitamin. And you can look these up. They're really easy to look up. At least add the supplements that you need to offset the consequence of the drug that you're taking. And we've talked about that in the past, and there's more information on that. But with, you know, the internet so prevalent and access to information being so readily available, if you're on a prescribed drug, search how that affects or what minerals or vitamins is depleted in your body when you're taking that. Because part of the chronic pain issue is we mask one symptom of pain, and then it might be that we're just on that drug for so long that our body is depleted of, say, calcium. And then we start to have other problems that we chase medical intervention for, when really, if while we were on that medication, we were supplementing and increasing the minerals needed, then we may not have had the second symptom. So again, advocating for ourselves and being well informed. It's important to know how the medications you're taking will interact with your body and brain and what symptoms will develop in the future if we don't treat them upfront.
And I appreciate, Andy, that you're helping us clarify this message, because chronic pain is a real problem.
A huge issue.
And something that has to be dealt with, and opioids may be the issue. There are,
or
though... the answer. But there are those people who may be in a chronic pain sensation, in part because of their chronic use of opioids. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be important for people to be able to make the distinction for themselves. We're not saying that we have an answer, you know, that fits everybody. Everybody's unique. So I appreciate that question, because we don't want to diminish the chronic pain problem. That is real.
Isn't that amazing that actually there are services also in place to help us get off of the opioids? Because some of us recognize that getting off the opioids will cause huge complications in pain and other medical issues. And so you actually have to kind of detox from them. You'll see a lot of warnings on drugs that say, don't stop this drug immediately. You know, you need to slowly back off. And all of that has to do with the effects of the drug. So we're not saying that everybody should get off opioids. We're saying that you should be aware of how they're affecting your system and do all you can to take the least amount necessary, not the highest amount necessary. Check with your doctor if there are ways to back off of them or continuously trying other alternative therapies that might work to help you eventually get off of the opioids.
And one of the cyclical problems is when we're on opioids, it affects our sleep. And sleep is a huge issue when it comes to solving all of our other body issues. When we're not sleeping well, we do create pain. So when we take opioids, we reduce our ability to sleep. We now have, you know, the sleep deprivation that contributes to other problems. And so it may not be easy for some people, but it may be worthwhile to consider trying to wean themselves off of opioids to give their body a chance to recover from the misdirection that it's been in. And that can be 3 days or a week. And if they're able to step off those opioids and they're able to deal with the pain in other ways. And that's really the part that we were hoping to get to today, was to talk about therapies that we can integrate that will help with pain. And really the first and most important one is motion. Okay. If we're moving, we are helping relieve pain if we're doing those things. And so if we are just sitting in an opioid stupor, we're not doing anything to help ourselves. If we can do more exercise, we may find that we are creating endorphins, which help solve that pain issue. We are moving those joints and stretching those muscles, and those things will help reduce pain. And then maybe we can start reducing the opioids and deal with a little bit of pain, because resilience is an issue that should be talked about here. Opioids don't make us more resilient. They help us to avoid dealing with the trauma or the pain. But if we are looking at trying to get better, then putting ourselves in a position where we can build our own resilience, where we can fight that off and realize that pain isn't our entire life. It just has to be part of our life right now. And we can work towards, again, a more healthy status in our bodies. Then we're much better off. And that's, I think those are all the important parts of this, is realize that the opioid after about 4 weeks is not contributing to an improvement. It may be continuing to mask a problem, and that may be the best we've got. If chronic pain really is the issue, then that's just what we have to accept.
But what's wrong with coupling it with some physical therapy to keep motion and movement and strength and balance and massage therapies? What's wrong with trying some other things that also bring you comfort and reduce your need for the amount of opioids? We don't have, and by the way, before I move on, we're not just talking about opioids. I mean, yes, all these articles are regarding opioids specifically, but we need to remember that all medications have a positive and a negative. So, but we're almost out of time, so let's give the address or the... Oh, we're moving! Woo-hoo.
Yep, we are moving.
Really?
Yeah, we're growing, needed more space, so we are now moving from Riverside and Mall Drive to Troon Park, which is at 100 South and River. And so
17B, come see us.
Yep, Suite 17B.
Our telephone number will remain the same.
Right, and that is local area code 435, and then the easiest number in the world, 477 on the left and 6999 on the right. And we really appreciate having this opportunity to talk to the community on the radio and get people better informed. And we would like to get calls for any feedback, any information that you have, any questions that you have. We want to answer those.
If you want the sites that we reference.
Yeah, we're happy to share that. And if you know somebody who is, you know, have some of these problems, you may not be able to convince them that they need to do what you want them to do. I think we can all agree that that's not the approach. But if we can provide people some information so that they can come to their own conclusion, that's really the best. And so if us having a conversation with your parent or your grandparent will help overcome some problems that they have, we would love to have that conversation.
Thank you for sharing your morning with us. We absolutely love being with you each Wednesday morning. Tune in with us Wednesday mornings at 8:30 a.m. and
Elder Care
here.
Radio. It's the most important radio program on the air. So we're just excited to be here, and it is a great, again, this is just a wonderful Chamber of Commerce Day in Southern Utah.
And if you're concerned about giving our office a call, check out our website, pathwayhospicecare.com. There's a lot of information there. We look forward to hearing from you this week.